Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking about becoming an audio engineer.
We'll talk with Chris Bell, a blind audio engineer and musician. Learn how he and his wife, Steffi, who is also blind, came to acquire the skills needed to run a successful business in a field that they both find very rewarding. Also hear about powerful music editing programs that can be used with a screen reader. But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Chris Bell.
Sometimes you just have to get the documentation and try things and look at it and spend time with it, hours and hours of just trying things. And, of course, talking to knowledgeable people like yourself. I mean, you know, you're a programmer and all kinds of other stuff. And we've had the MIDI Mag and JSONAR and all the different lists that we have to share information. And that's kind of how I learned to get around with stuff.
We'll be talking with Chris a little bit more about this attitude, but basically what he was saying in the conversation that occurred was about how sometimes what people do and their successes look easy. But in fact, if you look behind the scenes and how they got there, there's a lot of work and a lot of effort, a lot of perspiration that's involved in getting to that point, learning the skills that you need to learn, and just learning how to do things effectively.
Another point that Chris made is about how he learned so much from reading the documentation. And I can't tell you how many times our friends have said, well, how do you do this? And before anybody can answer, Pete says, did you read the documentation?
Yeah, I always stress that for people. There's a lot to be learned from the documentation. Often many of your questions can be answered that way, and sometimes more effectively. If you just take a little bit of time to read the documentation, it can save a lot of time of just messing around, making mistakes, and making wrong guesses later on.
And also, once you've gotten a foundation of understanding whatever the subject is from reading the documentation, then when you ask questions to follow up on some nuance that you really still don't understand, you can get a lot more efficient and effective help from the other people you consult. And so Chris was talking about the MIDI Mag list, and people are forever helping each other out on that list. Someone has a question about something musical or digital musical, and there's always somebody else available who can answer that question.
Yeah, you can often ask more intelligent questions if you at least know some of the nomenclature and what people are talking about to begin with. So, you know, it's not always easy and it takes a little time, but it's well worth the effort to read through the documentation, learn a little bit before jumping into a new endeavor.
Well, that was one of the pieces that Chris Bell created with his audio engineering and musician skills. And these little tunes that we'll be playing are available at his website, www.affordablestudioservices.com. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Chris Bell, who should be familiar to anybody who's already on the MIDI Mag DL.
We've known each other a bit, but can you introduce yourself to the rest of the listeners?
Well, sure. I'm Chris Bell, and like many of us, I do the recording and mixing and mastering thing and everything to do with sound. And I've talked with Pete for many years on various and sundry lists, and we've had a good time cussing and discussing all things audio under the sun.
And I gather you're visually impaired?
I'm a blind man. Yes, I be.
And what's the nature of your visual impairment?
I have retinoblastoma, which means I have marbles in my head. Excuse me, I have acrylic eyeballs. I went blind when I was a year old.
Retinoblastoma is a cancer of the retina?
Yes, it's a rare form of, fairly rare form of eye cancer. And I happened to draw that card and went blind when I was a year old.
So you know Braille, I suppose, and had all the appropriate training for visually impaired or blind folks. Is that right?
I grew up in Texas, and they were mainstreaming us at that time, so I went to public school. I'm a military brat, so I went to kindergarten in California and in Florida. And when we finally settled in Texas, I started going to school and completed high school there.
Do you know Braille? Do you use Braille?
Yes, I do. And I use it mostly for labeling things. I'm lazy. I like to hear stuff read to me, so I mostly use a screen reader. But I have an old clunky Perkins Brailler and a Slayton Stylus, which I'm terrible at, but it's sometimes handy to have it just to do a quick label or something.
That's sort of my usefulness of Braille. I get an occasional magazine from the National Library Service just to keep in practice, but it's mostly for me just labeling little notes and things like that.
I had a client here, and I'm telling you what, she's an old gal I did an album for, and listen to her use that Slayton Stylus like hearing a woodpecker. I mean, I just couldn't believe how fast and accurate she was with that Slayton Stylus. It was amazing.
Yeah, some people are really good and very facile with Braille.
We once met somebody who could read Braille upside down. We were really impressed.
That was pretty good.
Well, that's cool. Well, I must admit, since I started playing guitar, my Braille reading finger, which is my index finger on my left hand, has got calloused a little bit, so I don't read quite as well as I once did, but, you know, sacrifices you make for what we do.
Well, I have a similar story. I'm mostly a piano player, but years ago I decided to learn to play the upright bass, and I took a few lessons, and as you say, after a while, the calluses really built up. And I tell people I'm the first person to go blind from playing the bass because I couldn't read Braille anymore.
That's great. So that's what it's like playing them doghouse basses.
So I understand you're married. Is your wife a musician also?
She does play. She more played in church and different things. And I came up in the honky tonks and playing professionally. And we kind of met in the middle. And she helps me run our business. She is many things, including her latest gig is web design, which she's doing quite well at. Yeah, we work together to keep this thing going.
Is she also visually impaired?
My beautiful wife from New Zealand is blind. We got married in 04. We started talking back in 97, 98. We were both for different lives and different times. But we were kind of associated with a internet business. We were loose partners with a place called Audio Tips. And we started talking and what was going on back then? Oh, Vox Chat and Vox Phone and Net Meeting and modems, dial-up modems. Remember them sorry things? Oh, boy.
They're kind of clunky by today's standards.
But we were talking then, and she came over for a visit in 2000. We had a three-month visit, and then she came over a couple more times. And then in 04, we signed the papers and got married.
And what's her name?
Steffi. She's my Kiwi girl.
I'm curious. You said you played country and what you referred to as redneck rock and roll, but one of your monikers is long-haired songster, which usually refers to people who play, you know, Mozart and Chopin and that crowd.
Well, it's all kind of colloquialisms. I know what you mean by that, but, you know, the long-haired redneck hippie kind of thing. I until recently, I donated my hair to Locks of Love, so I have short hair now, but I'm part Indian, so I look like a Native American. Until recently, I had hair down to the middle of my back. I always kid everybody. I said, the long hair covers up my redneck. So,
yeah. Locks of Love is where you donate your hair and they make a wig for a needy child who's lost their hair either due to a medical condition or to chemo treatments?
Yes, ma'am.
That's really nice. That's a nice gift that you could give somebody.
Well, you know, parting with my hair was sort of an experimental thing to see maybe if it would help with the migraines. But when I found out that that's what would happen to it, that kind of cinched it. I said, well, it'll be for a good cause. That kind of allowed me to have closure with parting with something that had been with me for 30 years, you know.
That's real nice.
And if you want more information about Locks of Love, you can go to their website at www.locksofloveallonword.org.
You are listening to Viewpoints.
This week's focus topic is making and producing and editing music with little or no vision.
And we're going to learn a little bit about how Chris made this incredible transition, what his background was, and some of the obstacles he had to overcome in the process. I guess just to tell people how we met, mostly, is on this Minimag list. Can you tell people a little bit about the list?
Well, it's the Friends in Art list, and it got started way back in the 90s. It started off for a list just about MIDI, but MIDI and has kind of grown into everything audio, because we do so much more than just MIDI now, and it's where all us musician types, whether we are ranked beginners or whether we run our own studios, all get together and palaver and powwow and talk about right computers to use, the right audio interfaces, guitars, you name it. Pete and I have been on this list since forever.
Long time.
Yeah.
You're a very useful resource to that list, being a professional audio producer and engineer yourself, and give people lots of helpful advice. I really appreciate that.
You're kind.
People should know that. If they want to subscribe to that, they should go to the MIDIMAG website at www.midimag.org, MIDIMAG.ORG.
Absolutely.
And I've found that list to be very useful over the years, both for hardware questions, interfacing your equipment to PCs and Macs, accessibility of much of the equipment, and then also things about just producing music and mastering music and how to listen to music. It's a very useful and diverse list of primarily blind folks.
And it's a real cooperative venture, because the same people who are answering questions where they may be an expert in that particular aspect of music production will then turn around and ask a question on something else that they're not so knowledgeable about. And so everybody's helping everybody.
And even if you're a beginner, people are very friendly. There is no question that's too dumb, and you'll generally get a polite reply and very helpful reply. You talked about the business that you and your wife run together. Can you talk a little bit about that and what kind of services you provide, what kinds of things you offer to people?
Well, we do all things audio. If you want to come here and make a demo, if you have backing tracks and you want to come and sing, or you want us to create your backing tracks, between us all and then various other people we use, we can cover any kind of musical arrangements. If you have grandma's old tapes and records that you want put on CD, we can do that. We've done editing for Scholastic, like if you have lectures and stuff and you wanted all the ums and ums edited out of that, we can do that. Pretty much anything audio, denoising, cleaning up audio, recording audio. And we also offer duplication, any amount. We offer light scribing. We can do a little web design. I do a little bit of teaching, and mostly about audio, but all things computer, I use multiple screen readers. Between my wife and I, myself, if we can't fake it or get it done or hire it out, we'll find one way or another to get it done. We like to think we're the studio that everybody can afford. Of course, you have to draw the line somewhere, but we get people sometimes who wanted to do an album and didn't think they could, but they always wanted to, so they came here and did it. That's kind of what our philosophy is, like, music's for everybody. So we work with everybody from very much people beginning their musical journey to highly acclaimed professionals. We've managed to get some of all of it.
So you live somewhere near the middle of the United States. What about potential customers who don't live close enough to get to you?
And we can do stuff remotely, too. I mean, this is the age of high-speed internet. I did a spot the other week with some guy in Washington on the radio. And I had the phone hooked up to the board, and I had talent in the tracking room, and I was in the control room, and he was telling everybody what to do. And so we did a voiceover here, and through things like Dropbox and SendSpace or whatever, we did it here, and I had it to him. And, of course, we have PayPal, so I've done projects with people in Egypt, all the states. So this technology truly has made it a global community in many respects. So that's a good part of how things work these days.
What's your favorite audio editing tool? And if you use different ones for different applications, that's cool too.
Oh, I'd say probably SoundForge is the go-to for straight two-track editing. But there are times when Sonar is better if you want to nudge things. If you have multiple tracks, you want to move things closer or farther away and take out space. And it's very good. I've used Audacity. I happen to know that's one of my friend Pete's favorites over there. That's a great free audio editor. Has a good noise reduction. I've used Reaper a little bit before.
Do you use Cake Talking?
I use it some. For my students that use Cake Talking, I use it. There are reasons I like it and reasons I dislike it. I also use JSonar, which I also use WindowEyes, which just has basic access to the sonar track fields. And I also do a little script development myself. Most of you JAWS users use something called Hotspot Clicker, and you've had episodes on your show about that. Well, I use that too, and I have done a little bit, made a few hotspot sets. I've also worked with a little helper app called AutoHotKeys, which is screen reader independent. And it, you know these third-party plugins that we have trouble accessing. It can move the mouse and click on a spot and read a text box and do different things. So for different reasons, depending on what I'm doing, I'll use all three packages. Also like NVDA sometimes, and like for light scribing with QT widgets, NVDA reads them really well. So I use different screen readers for different functions and different applications.
Well, Chris rattled off a variety of audio editing and other types of tools, and that's a lot to get through. But if you want to find out more about some of those or where to acquire them, we'll have links in our show notes associated with this show. But one thing that shows is Chris talked about the diverse number of services that he offers. And in doing so, in offering those services, he has to know how to use a wide range of different programs and applications. And so he has to learn how to make all of these accessible. He'll use various screen readers, as he mentioned, or different utilities to make each program accessible. And then also he has to be flexible just for the people he's teaching and tutoring to be able to use the tools that they're using. So he really has to just learn each of these and be familiar enough with them so he can use them effectively or help others use them.
And if you'd like a half hour audio discussion of some of the tools that Chris mentioned, we have, of course, done shows on several of them in the last year and a half. In particular, show number 1216 was about the Hotspot Clicker utility featuring Jim Snowbarger, who developed it. 1137 was about Hotspot Clicker sets for various music editing programs with Phil Muir. We talked with Ross McGregor about being a blind professional musician, and his preferred tool is Cubase. That was number 1130. And we talked with Victor Tsaran about doing music production with Sonar and the JSonar project that he heads up in show number 1151. And most recently was 1224, when we spoke about audio editing with Studio Recorder and Audacity. And we actually personally know something about that. So Pete did all of those demos and we didn't interview anybody on that.
And we'll also have links to those particular shows in the show notes for this show, just to make it easy for you to find them if you'd like to hear about them.
So back to our conversation with Chris.
Later on, I'd like to talk a little bit about how being blind presents some challenges and how you've overcome that using the various tools that you use. But in the meantime, I mean, all this is pretty technical, and I'm wondering how you got into this field and how you came up the ladder to learn some of these skills.
During the 80s, I was traveling and playing with bands and into the technology a little bit. I had MIDI keyboards, and you know, back in the days when we had one big $2,000 keyboard that only had one MIDI channel and one sound on it, and if you had 32 sounds on that thing, you really had something. You were in tall cotton, as it were. In 1991, the state got me my first computer, a good old 386 DOS machine, and I started sequencing songs with a program called Sequencer Plus. This is way before digital audio hit the PC world. I think maybe the Macs were just starting to do Pro Tools and the predecessor of Pro Tools. I realized the power, and during the next 10 years, it just got better and better. I worked for a studio, and I was pretty much their MIDI guy, and I churned out hundreds and hundreds of MIDI files where the little gospel groups had come through here, and we'd sync up the computer to the tape deck, and you know, even though you might only have 8 to 16 tracks of audio, back then we're using the ADAT machines, glorified VHS for you guys that don't know what ADAT is, but you can do multi-tracking on it, but you could also use a device to sync a computer up to it, and all the things you can do on a synthesizer, bass, drums, organ, piano, etc., can also play, follow the leader with the tape deck. And that was a cool thing because we could have many, many tracks. And then, of course, we got into the sonar thing and real-time plugins, and the studio kind of opened up. And instead of having to have, you know, $100,000 worth of equipment, you could do it maybe with $5,000. It opened up more for people to do this stuff. It's just been a growing process. I went from working for other people to doing it for myself. We ate the elephant one bite at a time, kind of gradually working to where we are now.
Talk a little bit about the business part of what you do. That must present some challenges being blind also in terms of dealing with the computers and making sure you're correct about the numbers and the finances and budgets. How does that work out?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you what, paperwork is a scourge of every blind man, I think, you know, and especially when you get into the organizations, it seems like they thrive on paperwork. I kind of like keeping things as simple as possible. You know, that's why I love getting paid with PayPal and sending things via email, not having to have three different forms in triplicate. And I figure that by the time I get up to where I'm making tons and tons and tons of money, I'm going to hire somebody to do all that for me.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, me too.
So I guess it also must be important to be pretty organized, both for your business and in terms of laying out things in your studio and all. And it sounds like you're a pretty organized person.
I try to be. It could be better in some areas, but I didn't have any sighted help getting this board and any of this stuff set up. You know how I put this desk together? This is cool. There was this really nice chick over at Mid-Atlantic, and I spent 3 hours with her on the phone with a headset on. And, you know, I'm kind of a fat boy. Here I was grunting and getting crawling under the desk while I put this thing together with her describing parts to me and said, okay, well, you see that screw? Take this and put it in this hole. Now take that tool and twist that. I put that desk together with someone on the phone. You do things like, you say you got an 8-wire snake and you don't know which is which. Well, plug one end into a radio or an output of Winamp. And then when you find the one that gets a signal, mark it as one. Even if it ain't one, if you only got eight, then it's one, and the next one can be two. And then you can take little trash can tags or whatever, pieces of plastic, braille on them, poke a hole in them, and stick them on the end of a cord. I save all my, you know, that plastic stuff that we hate that you practically need a chainsaw to get through, that wrapping around things like cell phones.
Yes.
It makes excellent stuff to braille on because that stuff will not rub out. Same thing with those old flexible discs we used to use for talking book players. And then there's some things you just kind of got to, well, like if I need to get into the BIOS of my computer, well, you can go out and buy you a $300 Weasel card if you're a technician, or if you want to do a print job. Now, I found a little program that would allow me to do some simple light scribing, and if you're careful, you can get it right. But still, I've managed to overlap some text boxes before, so usually when I start a light scribing job, I usually have somebody to at least make sure the first one's good, and I know the rest will be fine. Sometimes you just got to get sighted help. That's something that you can never have enough of. Well, as you know, that since you've developed hotspots and stuff like that, you've said, Nancy, come over and tell me what's going on the screen here.
Oh, yeah.
We've been there. Well, it's nice to hear about that can-do attitude that Chris has. It certainly sounds like there are no excuses in his production studio.
That was another sample from Chris Bell's website that he created using his audio engineering skills. Turning now to this week's high-tech item, we'll be talking with Chris about access issues in music production.
You talked about a lot of very sophisticated tools that, in addition to taking a lot of technical knowledge and learning about music and computers, there's always access issues involved. How did you get around some of these? That must have been a real issue with some of these.
Well, I'm kind of a self-taught guy. When I first got my machine back in the 91, I buried myself in a DOS manual, and I read and read and tried it over again till I knew what debug did and how to stick stuff up in high memory blocks. I started off as a WindowWise user, and of course, we didn't have scripts and stuff like you guys did, so we had to kind of do things the hard way, learn how to click on things and make it happen. And of course, later on, when I got into the teaching gig, I had to get with, you know, Ziggy with JAWS and learn all that. But a lot of it's trial and error and a lot of study. Sometimes you just have to get the documentation and try things and look at it and spend time with it, hours and hours of just trying things. And of course, talking to knowledgeable people like yourself. And that's kind of how I learned to get around with stuff.
I think it's interesting that the people I know who are really good programmers and really good technically, they're really into the documentation. So few people are these days, and they just figured, well, I'll learn a program and just play with it. But really, if you are willing to dig into the documentation, you can learn a whole lot. I mean, the other thing also is, as you pointed out, I think it requires a fair amount of trial and error and, you know, perspiration to just get involved and play around. And people don't appreciate how much work it really is to come up to speed on some of these things.
Well, I envy someone like you who really knows what programming is. You know, I'm a very much a baby toddler programming. I mean, I understand a little bit about properties and methods and variables and expressions, and you could actually sit out and write a program, and I can almost write a program. So I struggle with the higher levels of this stuff. I can certainly get in and do stuff, but, you know, I'm someone who really understands code and stuff. I've always admired folks that could go to that level.
What was your education and training in?
I had high school and a little bit of college. I never took any advanced studies in anything. I've pretty much learned from the school of hard knocks. I've spent most of my younger life as a road musician doing a little bit of studio work. So I've pretty much have played the bars and made my crust of bread singing for my supper, as it were. And I traveled around with a laptop and a synthesizer and a couple guitars. And I've been in everything from full bands to just working by myself. That was kind of my formative thing, I guess. And now what's led up to this studio thing, too, is the health isn't quite as good now. So I don't want to be loading trailers and all that stuff now. So I kind of like the sponge in the bottom of the ocean, let the fish come to me, kind of, as it were.
Can you give your contact information, whatever you want to share with the listeners?
Sure. www.affordablestudioservices.com is our place on the web. And emails, they're on the website, but I'll give them anyway. It's CB, as in Chris Bell, Charlie Bravo, 1963 at sbcglobal.net. And for my wife, who does the web design, it's SDB1961 at sbcglobal.net.
As you can tell, Chris really enjoys what he does and talking about it. And here are some final words from Chris Bell.
It's a lot of fun. I'll probably never be a rich man, but, you know, if you can keep the wolf away from the door and enjoy what you're doing, then, you know, what more can you really ask for?
Well, thanks, Chris.
If you missed any of the links we gave in this show, they will all be in the show notes, which you can find at our website at www.viewpointsplus.net. That's it for show number 1237. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be doing part one of two parts talking about portable Braille displays because there were too many to fit into one show. Hear what exhibitors were displaying at the July 2012 International AER Conference. Next week, we'll talk with vendors from HIMSS and APH, and the following week, we'll feature products from Freedom Scientific and Aroga. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to contact@viewpointsplus.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey in partnership with WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.viewpointsplus.net. You can also follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Viewpoints Plus. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.